Piper did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across Northeast as you listen. This is their story. Healthcare training programs in Tynemouth are failing to connect willing people with NHS roles that desperately need filling. Despite workforce shortages across Northeast hospitals and care homes, qualified candidates are being turned away from nursing courses while lecture theatres sit empty and simulation equipment gathers dust.
My mum always said healthcare was a calling, not just a job. She worked as a dental hygienist for 23 years, coming home with stories about patients who'd avoided treatment for months because they were scared, then left her surgery smiling because she'd made them feel safe. I wanted that feeling. I wanted to be the person who made someone's worst day a little bit better. After my A-levels at Monk's Eaton High School, I started working as a care assistant in local nursing homes. I named each of my cacti after patients who made me laugh during those shifts. There's Doris, who insisted on lipstick before breakfast every morning, and Frank, who taught me to play chess while pretending he'd forgotten the rules. For 3 years, I saved every penny I could, learning how to help people wash and dress and eat with dignity, watching qualified nurses make decisions that kept people comfortable and safe. I knew nursing was what I wanted to do with my life. In 2021, I applied to Northumbria University's nursing program. I'd prepared for months, reading everything I could find about evidence-based practice and patient care. The assessment went well. The interview felt right. I talked about what I'd learned working with elderly patients, how I'd developed patience and empathy, how I understood that nursing wasn't just about medical knowledge, but about seeing people as whole human beings. 2 weeks later, they sent me a letter. I met every criterion, they said. My grades were strong, my experience was relevant, my interview had been excellent, but there were insufficient funded places available due to Health Education England budget constraints. They were sorry. They encouraged me to apply again next year. I did apply again in 2022. Same result, same letter, same apology, same encouragement to try again next year. I decided to find another route. I contacted NHS England directly about apprenticeship schemes. The coordinator I spoke to sounded genuinely sympathetic. She explained that Treasury spending limits meant they couldn't expand training numbers despite the workforce shortages everyone knew existed. There is no funding, she said, and it sounded reasonable. It sounded like something beyond anyone's control. I tried Northumberland, Tyne and Wear NHS Foundation Trust next, asking about healthcare assistant roles with progression pathways. The HR department was helpful but firm. Budget cuts had frozen all internal training programs. They had the roles, they said. They needed the people, but they couldn't afford to run the courses that would get people qualified for the positions they were advertising. For months, I accepted this. Everyone was saying the same thing. Universities, health trusts, national bodies. There was no money. Budgets were tight. Cuts had to be made. It sounded like the natural order of things, like gravity or weather. Then I went to Northumbria University's open day last month. I walked through the nursing building, the same corridors where I'd imagined myself studying. Lecture theatre after lecture theatre sat empty. Modern simulation equipment, the kind that costs thousands of pounds, was sitting unused under dust sheets. I asked the facilities manager about it. We've got capacity for 200 additional students, he told me, but only 85 funded places. The equipment was there, the teaching staff were there, the lecture theatres were there, but they could only use a fraction of what they had because someone, somewhere, had decided that connecting willing people to essential training was unaffordable. Walking home through North Shields, I started counting. 7 staff wanted signs in care homes and GP practices. 7. On one street, I thought about the qualified nurses from my old workplace who'd emigrated to Australia because they couldn't find adequate staffing levels or career development opportunities here. I thought about the patients I'd cared for who deserved better ratios, more time, more skilled attention. The contradiction became impossible to ignore. The people existed, me, dozens of others I'd met who wanted to train as nurses. The facilities existed, those empty lecture theatres, that unused equipment, the need existed. Every care home, every ward, every GP surgery struggling with understaffing. The qualified teaching staff existed. I'd met them at open days, read their research, heard them speak passionately about nursing education. What exactly was it that there was no money for? The government that prints the notes and mints the coins was telling me it couldn't find enough of them to connect people who wanted to work with work that desperately needed doing. But money isn't a natural resource you dig out of the ground. It's created when the government spends it into existence. I started to understand that the phrase "there is no funding" wasn't describing a fact about the universe. It was describing a choice. Someone in Westminster had decided that training nurses was less important than keeping spending numbers low on spreadsheets. The treasury that issues the currency had chosen not to issue enough of it to fill the lecture theatres, operate the equipment, pay the tutors and qualify the students. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. Where I am now, I see it differently. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it. Except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still watching, still ready to train. But I understand now that my story isn't unique to Tynemouth or even to nursing. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. The decision was to keep it locked.
What Piper experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique works like tobacco companies citing doctors who endorsed smoking in the 1950s. They found medical professionals willing to repeat industry talking points, gave them prestigious platforms, and treated their opinions as settled science. The more often these experts appeared in newspapers and medical journals, the more credible they seemed, even though their claims were funded by the very industry they defended. In Piper's story, every rejection cited economists or policy bodies who treat the household budget analogy as self-evident truth. Health Education England referenced budget constraints as though the government that issues pounds could run out of them. NHS England coordinators explained Treasury spending limits as natural law rather than political choice. University administrators accepted funded place quotas as though money exists independently of the institution that creates it. These aren't neutral experts describing economic reality. They're repeating an ideology that government spending must be rationed like a household budget. The more often this fiction appears in official documents, university policies and departmental briefings, the more inevitable it sounds. But the UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources. People, skills, materials, time. And in Tynemouth, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Tynemouth ranks 404 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025. Placing it in deprivation decile 8. The constituency has 736 registered charities, according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £31.5 million, according to 360, giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.